Hello and welcome to the Spooky Chris Podcast. I am your aforementioned Spooky Chris Ringler. I'm an author, podcaster, reviewer, and general ne'er-do-well, and I welcome you along. Tonight, we have a great conversation with author Tony Robles. He is an Afro-Latino writer from Miami, Florida. He explores folklore, morality, and personal identity through horror. A practitioner of Lukume and a Gardnerian high priest, he draws inspiration from ancestral traditions, African and European myths, and Christian mythos. His work often inverts biblical themes to critique fanaticism and religious indoctrination while centering queer experiences. In his free time, he can usually be found conjuring spirits with his coven. He lives in North Carolina with his fiance, two cats, and a hellhound. His new book, The Gospel of Noah, will be released October 6th from New Forest Press, an imprint of Crossed Crow Books. And this book is the first of the Summerland series. And I welcome you come along. Tony, thank you so much for making some time to talk. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. There's going to be a lot to talk about, so I'm just going to dive right in. So I always like to kind of find out more about folks and kind of where they started. So what were you reading and watching as you grew up?
Oh man, that is probably a hodgepodge of so many different things. Courage the Cowardly Dog was probably my favorite childhood show growing up. And I think that was a really solid introduction to, I think not only just like even teetering on surrealist, like kind of like ideas, but I feel like as a kid, that was like my first hard intro into horror because Courage the Cowardly Dog blended horror and those kind of comedic elements really beautifully. Are You Afraid of the Dark is another one that I really loved, especially if you grew up in the 90s. That one definitely, I would say, altered my brain chemistry quite a bit. and then, of course, you know, I was reading stuff like Goosebumps and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And I don't know, just as a kid, I just always liked horror, I guess, especially coming from my dad. He was a huge movie guy. Any X-Men movie, Lord of the Rings, any fantasy, but any horror movie especially, he always just took us all out, me and my brother, my sister, to see them. So from really young, I mean, I grew up knowing Michael Myers and, you know, Friday the 13th and just so on and so forth. That was just a really big part of my childhood growing up, I think.
I love to hear you mention Scary Stories, because that was, I feel like people don't appreciate how foundational that was for so many.
It really was, though. It really was. I can't even lie. I'll never forget being in the Scholastic Library in elementary school and seeing that. And I don't know, it just did something to me, man. Like, I don't know. I think horror has that. And that's why I love horror so much, because it has this fascinating effect to be able to frighten you, but comfort you even also. And touch on really beautiful and profound subjects, I think, in my opinion. That's why it's truly my favorite genre of all time.
Oh, absolutely. And it's fun as you're kind of in your teenage years and stuff, that it's almost safe danger. It's like you watch movies, sure. You're like, oh, I shouldn't watch this. This feels dangerous.
Yes.
But it's safe because it's a movie.
Yeah. It does. I think it's, I mean, at least for me, I mean, I had a pretty intense childhood, I think I'd say. So, I mean, I saw a lot of violence and I was exposed to a lot of really horrific things growing up. So in the weirdest way, it's like the horror movies felt predictable. And I think that there's definitely a psychological component, I think, to that for me, where it's like, it feels familiar. And like, I understand these things. I have seen the brutality of human nature. I have seen the varying shades of gray people could be growing up. And I think that's what I just love so much about horror. I just keep going back to that. I'm sorry. It's such irrelevant. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I could run my mouth, man. So please go ahead.
It is. You have the stage. So no, it's what you're here for, man. Like, sure. How as a young person did you cope with growing up in such an intense Childhood.
Man, people who know me now, I'm probably the most goofy, like clownish person you'd probably meet now. But as a kid, I was very reserved. I was very quiet. I internalized a lot of things, and I actually started out making comic books. That's kind of became my outlet when I was a kid. So I was just always writing comic books, and that was kind of like my soft launch, I guess, into like storytelling. Because over time I started to really enjoy just writing the dialogue and getting into the story. And I mean, that's probably the most honest answer, which is I just kind of escaped into creating stories, creating worlds, creating places that I could be otherwise, and be in a place where I understood. I'm not sure if that answers the question, but I feel like I did my best on that one.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I that just occurred to me without trying to pry. Like that's this that's you know.
Oh, you could pry, man. Listen, I'm all about getting down to the nitty-gritty and so lay it all out there.
So what inspired you as you grew up? Like you say, you used to kind of do comics and stuff. Were you reading comics?
I was reading a lot of manga or manga, growing up. That stuff I was definitely reading. So I read like Death Note, and then this sounds super corny. I read stuff like Cardcaptor Sakura and just like these these more like magical girl kind of like things. I think I was just really drawn to anything that had magic in it. That was a really major appeal to me. So yes, I was definitely reading comic books, more Japanese comic books than anything, when I was a kid, especially shows. So I grew up on like Toonami. And even that, I don't know, this is why I'm such a big believer in finding gems of inspiration and wisdom, mostly inspiration, just about anything, because growing up, I would see just these shows, and even though I wouldn't write story, even though I'm not writing stories about, fighting robots or anything like that, that you might have seen in anime growing up or aliens or anything, but there's fragments of things that you'll just hear in a bit of dialogue, or there's like they kind of touch on this concept, like let's say there's a woman in a well, and just that kind of triggers this thing in your head, and it just kind of sends you off into like all these scenarios your head starts to create, and you start to just, I don't know, I just start to write them down, and those things become stories. So yeah, so that's I would say those were probably most of the comic books I read when I was a kid.
Awesome. I love that they were there for you because as I was a 70s and 80s kid. So
Okay.
I can't, I mean, I'm sure they were out there, but like it feels like more of the world culture kind of got prevalent in the 90s forward. Like
Most definitely.
I wouldn't have known. I mean, I grew up in the, kind of out in the sticks, so I wouldn't have known where to find, manga or anything like that that
No, for
wasn't
sure.
just
Yeah, I
so
wonder
that's
what
great.
Gen X you would be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so my parents are Gen Xers too, so my dad was the one that read comic books. So he was the one there reading X-Men and stuff like that. But he had those all when he was younger. So for us, I as far as comic book things, it was mostly just TV shows, movies, cartoons, and things like that. I would watch all of those with him most times, honestly.
That's awesome. That
Yeah.
that's awesome. Did your father kind of inspire, he's kind of inspired your love of horror. Did he inspire other kind of, passions you had growing up?
I would say horror, and I would say horror, and I think just storytelling, too, just in general. I mean, my dad's not a writer or anything like that, but he was a storyteller. Like I remember him telling us, spooky stories when we were kids, and just, he's just always telling something. You're always engaged in some kind of tale with him, with talking with my dad. So I think that communicative element is something that I definitely took from him. The biggest thing being, again, the love of horror. And then my mom, I had a true crime mom, by the way. So that I know I most assuredly did. And that profoundly influenced my psyche, because I do incorporate a lot of true crime elements into my stories as well, even though they're not necessarily like a hard detective book or like, something like that. But there's more often than not this true crime undercurrent kind of going on. And that's definitely my mom big time. So I feel like it was kind of both of those things playing the biggest role in I think where I'm at now.
Awesome. So when did you find a passion for writing? When did you start?
So, like I mentioned earlier, I would say the earliest origin I could think is probably the comic books, but I think writing really came to the forefront when I was in middle school onward. And I was, not to be the stereotypical English gay student, English teacher's favorite, but that was me in school. I was always English teacher's favorite. And writing gave me a voice. And I think just coming from a childhood and being a kid who internalized a lot of things for reasons that I'm not going to just trauma dump onto the audience right now, but I had to internalize so many things. I didn't feel like I had a voice, so writing, I felt like I had one. And then when my teachers would read it, and they would be like, "Wow, hey, like this little guy's got something to say." It was validating for me that, okay, I know how to use words. And I know you mentioned other book influences. Crazy that I write horror, but Lemony Snicket, Series of Unfortunate Events. I devoured those books when I was a kid. Those were my favorite. And he also made me fall in love with reading and storytelling.
So you have a new book coming out, Gospel of Noah. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
So the Gospel of Noah is about an aspiring stage magician who is on a quest for power that ultimately lands him in between feuding cults. And that one I wrote about 6 years ago. And the story on that one is interesting because I wrote backwards. So what I mean by that is the entire Summerland series, starting with the Gospel of Noah, I actually wrote the first draft when I was about 22. I'm 32 now, so I was 10 years ago. But when I wrote the first draft for that one, I shelved it because I felt like there were things that were missing to that. And it's because I realized that that was actually the third one in the sequence of the four main gospels. So then I wrote backwards. So then I then wrote Noah, and I started drafting the concept for that. And I want to say back in 2018. And that one, I think still to this day, is probably one of the more raw and cathartic pieces I think I've written. Noah's probably, I mean, I feel like it's true of all your characters. I think they're all a part of you. I think they all come from parts of yourself. And I don't really worry if Noah's going to be liked per se. I think Noah is supposed to be perceived. I mean, as like woo-woo as that sounds, he's a part of myself that I didn't like. You know what I mean? It's just like there were parts of me that I did not like that I was putting into this character. But I feel like that's what good art is supposed to do. I feel like if you're not, I almost didn't publish it because I was so afraid and how personal I feel like it got for me. Because, these are fictional characters, these are fictional scenarios, but the emotions that you pull from, the memories that you pull from to give life to them are all very real, and you have to go into pretty dark places of yourself, into dark memories, to process these things and give them life. And I use my characters to do that. So, in very many ways, like I said before, it is my rawest and most personal. It's also my love letter to the witchcraft tradition that I'm a part in because, I mean, occultism plays such a heavy factor in throughout really all of my work, but particularly the main series. But I'll stop there, and you can say something. I feel like I'm just hogging up all the air.
No, you are this is amazing. So you mentioned that you realized that as you started writing that you were writing kind of in the wrong order.
Yeah.
What was that like? Like, did you go into this thinking like, oh, this is no matter how I start, this is a series, or did you just as you'd gotten along like, oh gosh, this is bigger than I thought?
It's definitely the last thing you said. It kind of became like, wow, this is a lot more expansive than I think I even anticipated initially. I knew that I wanted it to be a series. And I knew that my first intention was to try to make them interconnected standalones, and in many ways they are. I do feel like you could read any of the four main gospels as individual stories if you really wanted to. Of course, you would have a lot more context, and I don't know if fulfillment if there is the right word, but if you were to read the other ones. But once I then wrote Noah, I realized that this is what the first book, I'm sorry, the first draft of the third book was missing, and it was world context. It was all these things that I had introduced now in this first book. So then I moved on to the second one, and then I built on top of that. So then by the time I got to the third one, I had just this really rich world, you know? So then I had to rework and reframe a lot of the first manuscript that I wrote, which is the third book. And that led into the other project. So since then, I've written three other books that are all within universe, which are going to be sets of different series that all tie back into the main world set across different time periods. So to your point of things becoming bigger than I expected, the fact that it has come to that point where I'm now finding myself just drafting crazy timelines and like having to create like not birth charts, but like, you know, like keep track of like years characters were born and when they lived and who knew who. I'm like, man, this just snowballed into like this crazy universe that I did not fully anticipate would be as elaborate, but my God, it just gives me so much life and meaning, and the little kid in me is just so excited just putting it all together. So yeah.
Awesome. You'd mentioned that you practice witchcraft. How important was it to you to accurately kind of depict that that's in a way that's true to you and true to kind of that faith?
Tremendously important. I think that, and I mean, I know you love horror as much as I do, and you know, witches and occultism is not far away from horror ever. But you know, it's so much different when you're an actual practitioner of a thing, watching something that is supposed to be that practice. And of course, you know, you could enjoy it. I'm not expecting Hollywood to give me like a, you know, documentary style accurate depiction of witchcraft. I mean, it's a movie. It's supposed to be exciting and all these other kinds of things. But I still think that when actual occultists are telling our stories, there's a nuance and a love there in which it's approached with that is just simply not present in when non-practitioners are writing these things. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like the idea of the devil, who I do mention in these books. And it's not Satan, it would be the witch's folk devil, which is a lot older than that, right? So it's not even talking about the devil anymore as the Christian Satan, Ha-Satan. You know, it is this folkloric great initiator, right? Who is a revealer of mysteries and brings knowledge. And that's a very different perspective. And that's kind of like the whole, I think, summation of the series. And it's, I think, as a witch, knowledge is only dangerous if you are afraid of people knowing things, right? So I kind of take that back to even like the Garden of Eden days. I was once very, very religious, very Christian, you know, so I know my Bible very well still to this day. But, you know, ultimately, and that's another question that the series poses is God benign if his ultimate goal for humanity was to keep them ignorant in the garden, right? If he's saying knowledge is bad, when historically has that ever been the case where knowledge being inhibited, books being burned, right? You know, this whole, when has that been good, right? Like when that's never been a good thing. So to me, I think the devil only becomes an enemy if you're afraid of knowledge, if you're afraid of knowing things. If you love, you know, not knowing anything, if you love your ignorance, then you know, remain where you are. So.
Fantastic. Now you really do dig into, and you mentioned it a little bit, kind of the world building in the book, you know, with the characters and place and the history. Like it feels lived in, kind of feels like the best word I can come up with. Wow, why was that so important for the story? Or was where you kind of mentioned too, like you're building kind of the base for a series?
I mean, this is, I just feel like I'm going to sound like a crazy person, but this is an exorcism, man. I have no better way to explain it. I feel this idea, this world, this universe, these characters, and across all the books, it's like every time I get one out, it feels like an exorcism, because if not, it just haunts me. It just is constantly at the forefront of my mind. I'm always thinking about it. even down to the characters. I mean, I was born and raised in Miami, I'm a little Miami cat, but my series is set in the deep South. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know Florida is the South. And we say back home, especially for those of us from Florida, the more north you go, the more South Florida gets. That's when people's accents start to sound a lot more country, and it's starting to look a lot more like, Georgia and stuff like that, which is very interesting. But I had grown up meeting, because Miami is such a melting pot of so many different types of people, but I had met people from the country, and language and accents is another thing that I've always found fascinating. I feel like they tell us things about people. And there's something about hearing Southerners talk that, from the youngest age I can think of, I just always found really interesting. So I got into really, I'm sorry, I really got into Southern Gothic, which my mom watched a lot of pieces like, God, what was Frailty. That's probably one of my favorite movies of all time. And if you want to talk about the one that put me onto like Southern Gothic, I like Frailty is definitely like high up on that list. I saw that movie very young. But yeah, the need to just expand on this world, I don't know, man. It's like I just have to get it out of me. That's the best way that I could explain it. A lot of these characters, these worlds, not to sound woo-woo, but they almost feel like ghosts from another life that I just listen to. Like when I sit down and I write, I don't even think. I trance out, like I space out. And I don't mean trance like, I'm like convulsing over my computer desk, but it's like a flow state is what some people call it. You just go into, and I've lost hours of an entire day just writing. And by the time I look up, it's like the sun is down, or it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. And so yeah, so I mean, to answer your question, why does it keep expanding? It just keeps coming out of me, and writing it all, get writing it and getting it out is the only way I could just purge myself of it. So
Awesome. Now you did a great job of creating very grounded, real characters. Why do you think it's so hard for many writers to write real people?
I really like that question. That's a really good question. I would say fear, I think. I think that sometimes as writers, we can get caught up in trying to be everything for everybody. It's your art. It's something very personal, and it comes out of you. So when someone doesn't like it, I feel like your natural human thing is to kind of try to be to fix it. So with finding a difficulty with writing characters, I feel like, for me myself, all of my characters, I truly feel, especially going back looking through my old work, like I could see my psyche, like I could see me processing things through like all these different kinds of characters. And I feel like if you're going to write real compelling characters, you have to be able to be real and honest with yourself. And I feel like when it comes to creating these characters, instead of asking, I think that's I'm going to correct myself here. I think the biggest issue would be trying to tell your characters what they're going to be beforehand. I think is probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks in my opinion. And that is for me, when I'm writing, I have an idea, I have a concept of more of how I want a character to function in a story. You know what I'm saying? I have a general sense of what they might be like. But the moment I start writing, the moment my fingers start going and that character starts to speak, they truly become a life of their they take on a life of their own, And at that point, it starts to feel more like I'm listening to them talk in my head, and I'm just writing, what they'd say, and I can hear them, like I wouldn't say that, I wouldn't say that, or I wouldn't do that. And you start to listen to them, so I feel like just being there's a mystical component to it, and I feel like I'm a mystical person, and writing has taken on a very spiritual nature for me as the longer that I've been doing this. And I think all writers, if they just sat with themselves and just let those thoughts, let those voices kind of come out and just start writing them down, or just allowing them to exist, allowing them to be, I feel like would remove so much of the anxiety around trying to create a grounded or a real or a compelling character. Because if you're allowing your subconscious to speak, if you're allowing real, gritty, visceral emotions to come out, if you're allowing all of the mistakes you've made, all of the things you regret, if you're allowing all these things to come out in your characters, you're going to write compelling characters. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't like Cersei Lannister, but goddamn, is she a compelling villain, right? It's like she is so compelling. Like her story, you know, the way her character unfolds, it's fascinating because she feels multifaceted and like a human person. She doesn't feel like a caricature of evil or, you know, like this cartoonish, one-dimensional kind of idea. And I feel like that will only happen if you just don't allow, if you don't allow these things to arise from within yourself and come out. So that's where I could put it.
Fantastic. So I'm always fascinated with kind of how books come together once they've been written. Were you involved in kind of any of the layout or the cover conception or anything?
Oh yeah, that part I was very excited for. I love collaborations. I love working with other people. So when it came down to, I mean, even when I was doing when I indie published the first three books in the main series, I was most excited to work with the cover designers, the interior designers, you know, and so on and so forth. And I got the opportunity with New Forest Press to do the same thing. The cover designers, the interior illustrators were all very hands-on, and they were very open. You know, what are you thinking for this? What's your vision for this? And they allowed me to have a voice in that process. And you know, I shot them all the visual aesthetics I can think of, examples, so on and so forth. And they come up with what they did, and I was very happy with it. I think the cover is truly striking. I'm pretty stoked about it, actually.
That's awesome. Now, kind of back to what we talked about a little earlier. Why do you think horror is such a fertile template for telling stories, in kind of getting into to examine deeper issues?
Oh man, you got another 3 hours? That's such a man. Like, I mean, I'd love to come back and just talk just about that. But that is, I think, first of all, as a gay man, a queer person, I think horror is the queerest genre. And I think that there is a subconscious understanding, I think, with horror and queer people in which we see ourselves in it. And the example I'll give of that is the idea of the monster, right? If you look at horror, rather, it's the vampire, which we could argue has many homoerotic layers to just the creation and how it even came about. If we're looking at Dracula or Carmilla, right? It's just like there's a lot of homoeroticism that comes about within that. Werewolves, you know, they change and only come out at full moons, and they become these, you know, these bestial creatures out for flesh and stuff like that. I mean, it's not hard to draw parallels between, you know, cruising that was going on when, you know, homosexuality was illegal and they had sodomy laws and things like that. So gay men were forced to meet in parks or, you know, in dark places or come out at night. So there's so many parallels with, and even as a society, the fact that homosexuality has been seen as monstrous, right? It has been seen as deviant and as associated with sin and all of these other nefarious things. So when we see the monster in horror, when we see the Frankenstein monster that everyone hates, everyone's trying to kill for simply existing, right? Who doesn't even know what's wrong with him? He just knows the whole world hates him. It's hard. I mean, it's crazy to not, to especially be a queer person and not immediately see yourself in these types of characters, you know? And I think, like science fiction, where it's often, and fantasy is also used to comment on society, horror has been a pretty good mirror to hold up to society to see what they're afraid of at the time. And I think that that's what makes horror just constantly relevant. You could see cultural fears, societal fears present in what horror movies, what horror books are being written. You can see what people are afraid of. So I think that's what makes horror such a powerful vehicle to communicate more profound statements than what's just on the surface. And you know, everyone loves their splatterpunk and slasher films, and you know, I love them too. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, that all has its place. But for a lot of horror, you could look at that as comments on society, just as a whole. And I think that's what I love about storytelling. I think just even apart from horror, is that you're able to get people to think in a different way because you're using made up scenarios, you're using a fictional world, you're using, made up characters and so on and so forth. So it's easier for people to digest an idea than it would be to just blatantly hit them over the head with what you're trying to say. And that's what makes the arts so powerful, because they speak to the subconscious, they speak to, the inner self, like through metaphor, through imagery. Like that's what makes these things so impactful. And horror has been my most powerful medium for that. And I think just in general, in the world as a force, has been quite a vehicle and a vessel for communicating societal fears, truths. First thing that just popped into my head right now is if we look at a film like Get Out by Jordan Peele, right? It's like, I mean, we can talk about all of the societal commentary that's even in that, but it is horror. It is a horrifying situation, especially for us who are black or who are brown. Those kinds of things are terrifying to us. Or if you look at something like the show Them, which was one of the most brutal shows I've ever watched, heartbreaking, but it was a very good story. It's all about or Lovecraft Country. It's the horrors of racism. At that point, that becomes more scary than the actual monsters that they're up against. It is humanity. It is humans that are the most frightening and terrifying things you have to contend with. And that is real. And that's why I love horror so much.
Fantastic. Now, as I kind of wind things up, you have Gospel of Noah coming out in
Yes.
October. So how can folks follow you and the continuation of the series?
You can follow me on Instagram. I am The Bleeding Oak on Instagram. My books are going to be coming out in bookstores as well this fall, October 6th. I'm also creating a website which will be up hopefully within the next couple of weeks that you post this, so people can find me there as well. But my main form of communication right now would be my Instagram account, where I'm kind of running updates and all of those kinds of things on there. So that would be The Bleeding Oak on Instagram again.
Perfect. I can't thank you enough, Tony, for making some time. This was
Oh, thank
fantastic.
you.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, and it was a little choppy on my end, and I apologize again, got the jitters, but I hope. Yeah.
You were great, and I look forward to how the series continues.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you again for having me, my
You're
man. I
welcome.
appreciate
Take
it.
care.
All right.
That was a fantastic conversation. We really dug into some great topics, and his book, The Gospel of Noah, is a really great read. So if you like kind of like mystical and magical horror, I think you'll really enjoy it. And it's kicking off what sounds like it's going to be a pretty fun series. As he said, you can find him on Instagram with a website to come, and his book comes out October 6th. The book is called The Gospel of Noah. As for me, as always, you can find all of my stuff at spookychris.com, and that's links to all of my own books, and there's like half a million books there, good grief. All of my links to all my podcasts, all of my movie reviews, and blogs and everything else I am up to. And if you want to just follow the podcast, you can catch it on your least favorite podcasting app. And friend, I thank you for coming along for a little while, and I will talk to you soon.